Did I get my glasses to work today? All right, we all set? All right, with that, good morning, folks. This is Commissioner Brian Culk. We're meeting in the 12th floor of the Capitol today for our regular scheduled commission meeting. I'm joined by my colleagues, Commissioners Kevin Kramer and Commissioner Bonnie Fetch. Before I open up to other colleagues for comments, just a couple notes, I guess, for give me some personal discretion. You know, we all celebrated and remembered September 11th yesterday, but this morning woke up to the embassy attacks in Libya. And I was reminded that in 1996, I was part of the 22nd MEU that reinforced and evacuated the embassy in Libya. And so that whole country, that whole region of Africa has been very unstable for many years. And I was just thinking this morning of all the activity going on over there, where there's no doubt a Marine Expeditionary Unit in the Mediterranean that's on its way right now to reinforce the embassy. The ambassador is killed over there. Lots of different things going on. But this is where I think partisan politics needs to stop. They need to figure out what to do to secure the embassy, to keep American facilities safe around the world, and then make sure that we don't have these kind of things happening. So that's my comments for this morning as we get into our commission meeting. With that, I'd open up my colleagues for any comments.
Good morning. Look forward to a good meeting.
All right.
Well, it's hard to follow that act, Commissioner Culk.
Well, thanks, Bonnie. It's just the I just stepped back and, I mean, this one I follow goes on around the world quite a bit, but this one hit home pretty hard because I'm sure that I know some of those folks. There were some Marines that were killed in the embassy, and I'm sure I know some of the Marines that are with the MEU that's on its way over there right now. But that's the part that we have to decide how we're going to deal with these things, because they're not going away. This is, you know, we had embassy attacks back there in the 90s, you know, Beirut, Lebanon back in 83, you know, September 11th on our own soil, the USS Cole in 2001. So this is the new reality that we need to deal with as policymakers. And I think the American public just needs to understand that this is not stuff that's going to go away. So we have to, you know, make sure we make the right plans accordingly. But with that,
it'd be helpful to have some allies in those same countries.
Absolutely.
They're there to protect our own embassies on their soil too, that step it up a little bit.
Absolutely. That was what I've never been anywhere in the world like in Africa. There's nothing there. There's no infrastructure. There's really no government structure. When we were in Libya, Charles Taylor was the warlord taking over the country, and it's just there's no frame of reference that the average American can use to figure out what it's like over there. So all right. Well, with that, we have some items on consent.
I'd move passage of the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, moving on to item BK1. I move the commission adopt the finding of fact, conclusion of law, and order issuing corridor certificate number 139 and route permit number 152 to Northern State Power Company, authorizing construction of the North Dakota portion of a new Fargo to St. Cloud, Minnesota, 345 kV electric transmission line and associated facilities in Cass County, North Dakota, case number PU07759.
Second.
Very well. Moving on with the definition of the actual case, on November 14, 2007, NSP filed a letter of intent to submit an application for certificate of corridor compatibility for the North Dakota portion of the 345 transmission line from a substation in the Fargo, North Dakota area to St. Cloud, Minnesota. December 14, 2007, the commission shortened the waiting period to less than 1 year and assessed a filing fee. Moving on quite a ways, actually, to October 6th of 2010, in case number PU09679 and PU09678, the commission adopted a settlement granting advanced termination of prudence for the Fargo to St. Cloud line and three other CapEx regional transmission line projects. Just a reminder, the CapEx lines are the Fargo to St. Cloud line, Bemidji to Grand Rapids line, Brookings, South Dakota, the Twin City area, and Rochester to La Crosse, Wisconsin. So the commission, myself, Kevin, and Tony, voted for the ADP in October of 2006. Since that time, we continue to move forward. The company filed December 30th certificates of corridor compatibility for, at that time, two potential routes, one from west of the Mapleton area through Cass County, another that would basically go to the interstate and go down through Richland counties. On October 3rd of 2011, the company basically requested the commission combine the corridor and the route hearings. On occasion we'll do corridor hearings and then do route hearings. But in this case, the company requested to do a joint combined hearing. The commission also unanimously approved that in October of 2011.
Moving forward to December 21st of 2011, the commission issued a notice of filing, a notice of hearing, deemed the application complete, and scheduled the hearing for January 30th of 2012 in the Cass County, Fargo City Commission Room is where we headed at. On January 30th of 2012 at 10 o'clock, the public hearing was scheduled and held. NSP presented two witnesses, and we had numerous members of the public offered a variety of comments. It was a very full hearing. We started at 10, and I think we were out of there before 5 o'clock, but it was a very, very good, thorough hearing. At the hearing, like I said, we had a lot of comments in there, and which resulted in some changes later on down the road that I'll talk about. A little bit of background about NSP. Presently serves around 86,000 customers in North Dakota, including Fargo, Grand Forks, Minot. NSP owns approximately 250 miles of transmission line, 12 substations in North Dakota. This particular transmission line is a reliability line, which of course provides reliability to the Fargo area, but it also will free up the bottleneck of transmission congestion that currently exists in North Dakota. This transmission line is scheduled to begin construction in first quarter of 2013 to accommodate a planned 2015 in-service date, meeting Red River Valley load forecast. So, you know, for me personally, there's transmission lines are without a question the most challenging things we do. But in this particular case, we need to meet a load forecast in 2015, and we need to get this line moving forward and make sure that we have reliable, affordable energy to our customers. The Fargo project is constructed as part of the CapEx initiative. As I talked about before, we have 11 different utilities involved in it. This particular line, Fargo to St. Cloud, the North Dakota portion of this particular order will include 33 miles of length inside of North Dakota. The corridor was proposed at 1 mile wide, but the company agreed, and we also concurred that a 300-foot wide corridor is actually the size it will be going with. Proposed route, roughly there's some maps that were handed out. If you start northwest of Mapleton at the substation up there, head straight south through Harmony Township, Durbin Township, Addison Township. Then the line will proceed in an eastward manner through Warren Township, drop south into Normania Township, which is at this point we're southwest of Horace, go straight east, which will be south of Horace, through Pleasant Township, north of Oxbow, to meet a river crossing, which will link up with the Minnesota portion of this line. And just for background, the Minnesota portion of this line basically runs straight east once it gets into Minnesota to the interstate, and follows the interstate right down to the Twin Cities. If you've had the chance to get to Minneapolis at all in the last while, you'll see the St. Cloud to Minneapolis portion is completed. I was actually down there a couple weeks ago and get a very good visual of what the poles look like. Let's see. The typical span, speaking of poles, will be between 600 and 1,000 feet. There are times due to soil conditions that different spans will be needed. This transmission line will be double-circuited, basically meaning that in the future, should more power be needed, there has the ability to add an additional line to this to provide more power. Let's see. This is not in the Whipping Crane corridor, but however, the company is going to file this in accordance with the Avion Power Line Interaction Committee suggested practices for raptor safety, so they're going to make sure they will do additional requirements. The total cost of the Fargo to St. Cloud line is approximately 500 to 700 million, so we've got quite a range there. The estimated cost of the North Dakota portion here is approximately $60 to $70 million, which would include the substation as well as the 33 miles of line in North Dakota. Let's see, the company and the orders in compliance, they're with make sure that the exclusion areas are avoided, or avoidance areas are avoided, exclusion areas are appropriately dealt with. The State Historical Preservation Office has concurred that no significant properties are affected. There's consultation with all the state, local, federal agencies, which are identified in supplemental filings. Less than 1% of the proposed corridor contains wetlands. There are no rare and unique resources on this route. There is one home that is within 500 feet of the proposed line. The individual signed a waiver, and that actually location is right in Addison Township, where the route turns back to the north, so it's in the middle portion of the line where it's within 500 feet. A couple of the areas of concern that I talked about that came out during the hearing, witness Dean Kraft, who operates two private airstrips in his property in Mapleton Township, was very concerned about the location of the proposed line as it would affect his his aircraft. He flies his own aircraft, his own runway in there. The company worked with him to do a slight route modification that he agreed to, which doesn't impact his airstrip. That is also noted in the amended. The commission finds the amended routing should be approved. Pleasant Township, there were numerous residents from Pleasant Township that opposed this line. And Pleasant Township, you can look by the map, but a good portion of the line runs through Pleasant Township. The largest concern we heard was from residents that were approximately a half mile south of the proposed line, and they had the concerns that a lot of folks have about looking at the lines, their concerns about safety, but they are not inside any of the exclusion areas. Actually, there are some routes that are actually homes that are actually closer to that did not provide testimony. The other area of concern was the river crossing. There was three river crossings that were looked at by the company. They chose this route. There's been, quite honestly, a lot of discussions about the Fargo diversion. The Fargo diversion continues to be a moving target. Just I read yesterday that there's now more meetings planned, that the diversion might take yet another shape. In my opinion, there may be a diversion, there may not be a diversion. But quite honestly, the company initially was heading a route farther north than the current route, but because of all the uncertainty created around the diversion, they opted to move the line farther south. For me personally, this project was, back when we combined the corridor and the route, that's when Minnesota is also doing their portion of it. The Minnesota portion of this line was sited first, if you will. And so that, there are those that will say that we let Minnesota drive this route. I think that there's transmission planning is without question one of the most difficult things we do. But in this particular case of the river crossings, the one that was selected was the one that had the least impact. This has the right amount of we've been able to do a very good job of planning this. When you look at what really drove this thing, I think the uncertainty around the Fargo diversion did cause the line to go to the south. There's no question about it. But our job in the commission is to make sure that we've met all the requirements, that we meet the reliability needs, and I feel very comfortable with this route. Also, there is another key thing that the Pleasant Township Board of Supervisors, which is the area that, quite honestly, we've heard the most concern, they issued their own conditional use permit for the proposed route on March 20th of 2012. So, the folks that are closest to the project issued their own approval of it by their conditional use permit. The proposed route and facility are compatible, and I will be voting for it. See if I have any couple of notes I wanted to bring out here. We talked about the river crossings. We talked about the power lines. With that, I believe that is my point. I'll be voting for this. And with that, I'd open up to my comments. Colleagues, I'm guessing there might be some other comments.
Okay. This is... Sorry. Thank you. This has been around for a while, and certainly I agree that these are, from what I've tackled thus far, these transmission line sightings are among the most complicated issues that I've seen come before the commission. In this particular case, I have been out there and looked at the area in question. I've considered, the record thoroughly. The whole issue of the diversion and its effect on this project, I agree with Commissioner Kalk. There may or may not be a diversion plan, but even if there is, it's uncertain what that might be or when it might take place. And I don't believe that this commission can hold up making a decision on this based on some speculative, uncertain future decision, which may come down about the diversion. Certainly, there are some people who are not happy with the placement that's being proposed here. But I think the point is well taken that they are outside the exclusion area, and it's going to affect someone somewhere. I will be voting in favor of this transmission line.
With that, First of all, thank you for bearing with me. I'm having a little nosebleed situation here, but I think we got it under control. I will be dissenting. And I think what I'll start with, and I'll be writing a dissenting opinion as well and filing it for possible appeal. A couple of things I want to state right up front, though, with regard to the diversion. I have, since the very beginning, been an advocate for considering the possibility of a diversion. It would be imprudent, I think, to somehow deny that a diversion is possible, if not likely. And it only makes sense that we would consider whatever weight the diversion likely or unlikely might have. And, in fact, at one point I was advocating for collaboration with those that might be building the diversion. But, of course, the timing of the diversion does not coincide well with this. So, to be honest, we are basing our decision to some degree today on speculation because we're considering the possibility, if not probability, of a diversion. And it's not the uncertainty of the diversion that has created this, but rather the possibility of it. So I just want to make very clear, we are considering the diversion possibilities as unlikely or likely as they might be. We cannot lose sight of the effect our decision will have on the property rights of North Dakota citizens. And although the benefit of the project is going to be socialized, the negative consequences are very localized. They're not socialized at all. And no one's more aware of the impacts that this facility will have than the people that will be, you know, expected to live with it. And because I feel the proposed river crossing is not in the best interest of the constituents, I am respectfully dissenting today. The Energy Conversion and Transmission Facility Siting Act, the Administrative Practices Act, our own rules at the Public Service Commission require of me and my colleagues siting approval which is in accordance with the law and whose facts are supported by a preponderance, that is to say, the greater weight of the evidence. The North Dakota Supreme Court has recognized that with highly technical subject matter such as the siting of a 345 kV transmission line, our decision will be afforded appreciable deference if it's appealed. And so it's critical that we arrive at a correct decision today as its outcome will carry with it significant generational consequences. Advocates of the route and corridor have cited the following considerations in support of their position, namely need, reliability, timing, cost, the possible Red River Diversion Project and Diversion Project in the Minnesota approved route. And I don't question the relevancy of any of these factors. In fact, they're very important to me. And rather, when discussed in the context that I'm about to articulate, I feel these issues actually give weight to my position. First of all, I agree the project's necessary, and I've demonstrated that by my approval for prudence and the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity that we've already approved, as Commissioner Culk pointed out. Likewise, I accept this project's termination point and its proposed placement west of the Fargo-Moorhead metropolitan area. But I believe it's because of the line's high voltage, 345 kV, and the type of the current, the alternating current versus the direct current, that I feel reliability will be economically met, not its southern placement relative to the metropolitan area, as has been argued by the advocates. To advocate reliability, and this is a very important point, and it's sort of fundamental to the argument of the more northern route, if you will. To advocate reliability on placement near the metro area advocates placement through the heart of the metro area. In other words, if we're going to argue that reliability is best served by proximity to the load, then it ought to go right through downtown Fargo. But obviously, that would be imprudent because that would be to deny the human element. So if we're going to consider the human element, then the route's proposed southern placement can, if the route's proposed southern placement can be so influenced by assumed growth to the south out of Fargo, then at least equal right weight should be afforded to the established communities of Oxbow and Hixson. The companies advocate that deviations carry with it the potential for expanded cost and an extended building schedule. And I don't argue that. Inflation and its effect upon families, seniors, businesses is a primary consideration in all of my decisions, both presently as an economic regulator and formerly as the state's economic development director. But it's precisely because of this experience that I'm not persuaded by the company's assessment. When properly adjusted, for example, over the 50-year life of life expectancy in the MISO allocation process, the eventual costs are not so significant to override the concerns that I articulate in this opinion. And I extend the same logic to the project delay. Considering the long-term negative consequences overwhelmingly borne by those citizens who realize little or no benefit, I'm not sufficiently convinced to accept the company's proposals. The record includes discussion pertaining to the Red River Diversion Project, as we've mentioned, and its effect upon the proposed river crossing. It is my belief there are other routes, at least potentially, that both further ensures the project's placement on the wet side of the diversion channel as well as affords appropriate weight to growing and established communities. The United States government has bestowed upon North Dakota the decision to site this 130 to 175 foot high electric transmission line with a 150 to 180 foot right-of-way. Our rules allow the commission to consider whether such a structure is minimally invasive to the visual effect on an adjacent North Dakota landowner or landowners, in contrast, for example, to pipelines. In my opinion, the river crossing is predetermined by the state of Minnesota, and it constitutes an abrogation of our sovereignty. This is especially disconcerting in light of this project's construction on the Minnesota side prior to our approval. As Commissioner Culk pointed out, they're already building it in Minnesota, and here we are voting on it today. Because multi-jurisdictional route reconciliation is neither a new nor uncommon issue, this agency's denial of the present applications should not be fatal. I'm fully confident the companies could produce to this commission a more acceptable submission for our approval.
All right, anything else, Kevin?
Nope.
Bonnie, do you have anything else?
Nope.
Daryl, I think a roll call vote is in order.
Then we'll do that. Commissioner Culk.
Aye.
Commissioner Kramer.
No.
Commissioner Fitch.
Aye.
All right, thank you. Item BK2. I move the commission issue a notice of hearing in the complaint of Public Service Commission Advocacy Staff versus Shores Company, Inc. and Public Service Commission Shores Company, Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement Case, GS12-31.
Second.
On August of this year, the Public Service Commission Advocacy Staff filed a formal complaint alleging violations of the North Dakota one-call law and recommended a fine of $2,000. A public hearing for this matter has been scheduled and will commence on Monday, October 29th, 2012 at 1:30 in this hearing room.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Item BK3. I move the commission issue the notice of opportunity for hearing concerning the proposed switching access price schedules of all the companies listed in the agenda.
Second.
What we have here is recently the commission has gone through changes in interstate rate, intrastate rate, and VoIP traffic. What has happened is the companies have, once the initial tariffs were approved, they've gone back and they've made some minor tweaks to this. So what this does is this notices that comments and requests for a hearing must be received by close of business October 26th. So this is just a, quite honestly, a cleanup from some of the company's initial filings, and we'll just give all folks an opportunity to comment by October 26th.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Item BK4. I move the commission issue a notice opportunity for hearing concerning the Budget Prepay Inc.'s application to be designated as an eligible carrier for the purpose of receiving Federal Universal Service Support, case number PU12707.
Second.
On August 31st of this year, Budget Prepay filed an application for designation as an eligible telecommunication carrier, ETC, for the purpose of receiving Federal Universal Services support for low-income customers under appropriate law. Comments and requests for a hearing must be received by October 26th of 2012. This is not the first one of these we've done, but I think it's relatively new that because of changes in recent FCC law, that companies can now request ETC even though they have no facilities in the state of North Dakota. So this particular company, Budget Prepay Inc., is based in Louisiana. So this is actually the second time we've seen a company ask for this type of designation. So I look forward to anyone having comments, giving them to us by October 26th, and we will proceed accordingly.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Item BK5. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for comment in the application for approval of an interconnection agreement amended negotiation between Mid-Continent Communications and North Dakota Telephone Company, case number PU12723.
Second.
In September of this year, Mid-Continent Communications entered into an interconnection agreement amendment with the North Dakota Telephone Company dealing with, let's see here, exchange of traffic, number portability, ancillary services, and wholesale services for resale to MidCon and the Drake, Anamoose, and Pheasanton, North Dakota exchanges. The agreement was filed with the Commission on September 5th of 2012. Typically, these are posted out to the web for 90 days, and if no one has any comments on them, they go into effect. But in this case, Mid-Continent filed a request for approval of the interconnection agreement in less than 90 days pursuant to the appropriate statute. The Commission will receive comments on this agreement until October 24th, and at that time, we can then make a decision.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That concludes the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Kramer.
Thank you. I just have a couple of small pipeline projects here. KC1, I move the Commission acknowledge the letter of intent to shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to 2 weeks and assess a filing fee of $12,500 due upon filing an application in case number PU12675, Basin Transload LLC's proposed crude oil pipeline in Mercer County, North Dakota.
Second.
This is a letter of intent, as we're acknowledging today. It's an 8-inch pipeline that would originate at the Tesoro North Knife River Valve Station and then proceed north about 4 miles to the crude oil tank to be placed in at the transload facility. It's very short, obviously. It's the Basin Transload Facility is located at the old Indian Head Mine headquarters, the former Indian Head Mine. It is a westernmost point in this area of the BNSF rail access, and so they've designated a unitrain facility. I think the county commission has agreed to move some roads or something to allow the larger trains. They've been loading smaller trains for some time. This certainly should help eliminate some of the dust right around that area, because moving the oil by pipeline 4 miles away is certainly prudent. Everything seems to be in order. We'll, I'm sure, hear all about it at a hearing at a future date.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
NKC2. I move the Commission acknowledge the letter of intent to shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to 30 days and assess a filing fee of $5,000 due upon filing an application in case number PU12683, Hess Corporation's proposed crude oil pipeline in Williams County, North Dakota.
Second.
This is quite an unusual little project. They're seeking the corridor certificate and route permit that would authorize the Hess-Romberg truck facility tie-in to a 14-inch crude oil pipeline project, which proposes the conversion of existing gathering pipeline segments from their current gathering operations to be placed into service as a transmission facility. So the pipeline's already in place. It's about 10 miles from Romberg to Hess's facility, the rail facility in Tioga, which is a very large and very impressive rail facility. Most of the line was put in place in 1960. There are a couple of smaller lines that hooked to the rail facility and to the Romberg truck loading facility. But all of this infrastructure would be above ground, right at the Romberg facility. And because of the increase in oil in the line and the pressure, and of course the destination now of the oil, it will no longer be a gathering line, but rather becomes an intrastate transmission line. So everything seems to be in order. I would think this we'll have if not a formal hearing, at least an informal hearing, and learn all about it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And that ends the items of my portfolio.
All right, thank you, Kevin. Commissioner Fetch.
Thank you. Most of the items in my portfolio today have to do with grain warehouses. The first is case number GE12679. I move the Commission adopt the order in that case revoking warehouse license number 128 of Falkirk Farmers Elevator Company at Falkirk, North Dakota, and ordering that Falkirk Farmers Elevator Company return grain elevator warehouse license number 128 to the Commission.
Second.
On June 8th of this year, the commission was notified that the grain elevator warehouse bond issued to Falkirk would be canceled on September 6th. North Dakota Century Code Section 60-02.1-09 provides that the commission shall immediately suspend an elevator's license if the licensee fails to file a replacement bond at least 30 days before cancellation of the current bond filing. As of August 7th, no replacement bond was filed with the commission, and grain elevator warehouse license number 128 issued to Falkirk was suspended effective August 8th. The elevator had until September 6th, 2012 to procure and file an adequate bond or submit a written request for hearing. Neither a bond nor a written request for hearing was filed with the commission, and grain elevator warehouse license number 128 issued to Falkirk Farmers Elevator at Falkirk, North Dakota is revoked. The motion is to, a motion and order are to revoke the warehouse license and order that Falkirk return the grain elevator warehouse license to the commission.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, BF2. I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-12700 granting the request of SRS Commodities Limited of Mayville, North Dakota to operate a 440,000 bushel grain warehouse at Falkirk, North Dakota effective immediately.
Second.
All right, SRS Commodities filed a license application to operate a 440,000 bushel grain warehouse at Falkirk, North Dakota. SRS Commodities Limited is in the process of purchasing the grain warehouse at Falkirk from Falkirk Farmers Elevator. The closing on that purchase is Friday, September 14th. The commission deleted the facilities that SRS Commodities Limited will use to establish a license at Falkirk. SRS is a dry edible bean company, and at this time they will purchase dry edible beans in Falkirk. However, they expect to expand their business to also include peas and lentils. Statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends the license be issued to SRS Commodities at Falkirk, effective immediately.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, BF3. I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-12705, granting the request of United Pulse Trading Incorporated to operate a 122,000 bushel grain warehouse at Minot, North Dakota, effective immediately.
Second.
United Pulse Trading Incorporated of Bismarck, North Dakota, filed a license application to operate a 122,000 bushel grain warehouse at Minot, North Dakota. United Pulse Trading purchased the current Minot location in the fall of 2011. The company announced there will be a $20 million initiative to construct a processing plant to purchase and produce dry edible beans, peas, lentils, and chickpeas. In addition to producing the whole and split pulse products, this factory will have the ability to mill pulse crops into flours, and from those flours extract the protein, starch, and fiber as a high-quality food and feed ingredient, and they expect to be fully operational by January 2013. Statutory compliance has been met, and it's recommended the license be issued effective immediately.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-12706 granting the request of Central Valley Bean Cooperative to operate a 20,000-bushel grain warehouse at Fairdale, North Dakota, effective immediately. I further move the Commission grant the request of Central Valley Bean Cooperative to operate its grain warehouse at Fairdale full-time through dry edible bean harvest and on an as-needed basis by appointment only for the remainder of the year.
Second.
Central Valley Bean Cooperative is a state warehouse at Buxton, North Dakota. It filed a license application to operate a 20,000-bushel grain warehouse at Fairdale, North Dakota, which is a federal warehouse. Central Valley Bean Co-op will receive dry edible beans during harvest at this location, and during the remainder of the year, it will be operated on an as-needed basis only. Since this facility is licensed as a facility-based grain buyer, it does not meet the criteria for establishing a receiving station, and therefore a grain warehouse license must be obtained. Statutory compliance has been met, and it's recommended that the license be issued, effective immediately.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I move the Commission issue a notice of filing, notice of informal hearing, and notice of opportunity for hearing in the joint application of Otter Tail Power Company and Cass County Electric Cooperative Incorporated for approval of an electric service area agreement and resulting issuance of a certificate of public convenience and necessity to establish and designate service locations to be served by Otter Tail and Cass Electric within and around the cities of Abercrombie, Amenia, Christine, Walcott, Davenport, and Mapleton in Cass and Richland counties of North Dakota, case numbers PU-12-696 and PU-12-697.
Second.
On August 29, 2012, Otter Tail Power Company and Cass County Electric Cooperative Incorporated filed a joint application for approval of a service area agreement to establish service areas and designate service locations to be served by Otter Tail and Cass Electric within and around the cities of Abercrombie, Amenia, Christine, Walcott, Davenport, and Mapleton in Cass and Richland counties of North Dakota. Otter Tail further requests issuance of a certificate of public convenience and necessity, authorizing it to extend service to locations within the Otter Tail service area set forth in the agreement. The issues to be considered are whether the agreement complies with North Dakota Century Code, Section 490306, and whether the approval of the service area agreement and resulting certificate issuance are compatible with the public interest. And comments and requests for hearings must be received from persons who want to comment on the application in writing or persons desiring a hearing by October 26, 2012. An informal hearing on this matter is set for October 10, 2012 at 1:30 p.m. Central Time in this hearing room.
One thing I would just add is that we've seen many super service area agreements come through. This is the first one that I recall has been in the southeastern part of the state. So it's good that we have Cass County Electric working with Otter Tail, because the same type of issues we're seeing in the west are no doubt occurring in the east. So it's good to see. Look forward to the informal or the hearing as appropriate.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, BF6. I move the Commission adopt an order in case number GE-12-643, granting the request of ADM Benson Quinn, a division of Archer Daniels Midland Company, to operate a 2,833,000-bushel grain warehouse at Hebron, North Dakota, effective October 1, 2012.
Second.
ADM Benson Quinn, filed a license application to operate a 2,833,000 bushel grain warehouse at Hebron, North Dakota. And this is a new 110-car shuttle facility located 2 miles east of Hebron. Statutory compliance has been met, and it's recommended the request be approved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Another shuttle facility.
Kind of big, $2.8 million.
Yeah, that's a lot of grain. All right, and lastly, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE12663 granting the request of Trinidad Benham Corporation of Denver, Colorado to operate as a facility-based grain buyer at Findlay, North Dakota, effective immediately.
Second.
Trinidad Benham Corporation of Denver, Colorado is a federal warehouse. They filed an application to operate a 45,000 bushel facility at Findlay, North Dakota, under a facility-based grain buyer license. Trinidad Benham is establishing a license to receive dry edible beans at Findlay Farmers Grain and Elevator Company. Findlay Farmers Grain and Elevator filed a request to temporarily remove these bins from their license capacity while this receiving station is in operation. Down the road, there the options for Trinidad would be to discontinue business after the beans have been removed or to request to operate the facility on an as-needed basis. But at this time, we have this request. And I staff recommends the request be approved.
All in favor?
Just a quick note, too. Sue reminded me that the Findlay Farmers Elevator just celebrated their 100th anniversary here just a few months ago.
Wow.
Right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that completes the items in my portfolio.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Fetch. Just looking ahead a little bit, we have a formal hearing scheduled September 25th on Tuesday. NSP electric rate increase customer credit. It's basically they're going to come in and talk about a mechanism they've developed on performance-based rates and ways to potentially refund money back to customers with interruptions in power. So I look forward to that hearing. And our next scheduled commission meeting is the next day, September 26th. With that, if my colleagues don't have any closing comments, I would open it up for questions.
Excuse me. Could you repeat what you just said about the formal hearing?
Sure, I'll do my best. The September 25th, Tuesday, we have a formal hearing.
What time, please?
Good, 8:30 a.m.
8:30, and this is with
XL slash NSP.
Okay.
As a follow-on to the rate case, they're going to come back and define their mechanism they've developed to potentially refund some money back to customers tying to reliability. Look forward to the hearing.
And it's here in this room?
Yes, it is.
Very well. The United Pulse Trading matter. Could you tell me a bit about that? How big is the warehouse and what sort of investment are we talking about, if you know that?
What number was it?
Okay, that was number
BF3.
And what was your question?
My question is, how big of a project is this? What's the investment involved? How many jobs? And how do you make flour out of peas?
Sue Richter is here from the licensing division. Sue, maybe you could answer that. How do you make flour out of peas? I would assume they're dry and you crush them, but grind them. But maybe Sue can speak to that.
I guess to be quite honest with you, I'm not sure what the process is, but we can give you a contact name, so maybe you can talk directly to a representative from United Pulse. The capacity, did you have that? That was $122,000, and the investment that they're anticipating making is $20
million. $20
million?
Mm-hmm. And 122,000 bushels?
Right. They are just licensing just a small amount of bins at this point. And
What is it they're going to be handling, please?
They're going to be handling peas, lentils, chickpeas, I believe.
And dry edible beans.
Dry edible beans, yeah. They have a facility right now at Williston.
Do you know where this facility is going to be located? Where are they proposing to locate it?
In Well, actually, it's across from the, and Kevin might have to help me out on that one, Commissioner Kramer, is it the transloading facility in Minot? That is that what it's called right up there? I can't think of it off the top of my head.
Well, it is a transloading facility. It's the term you're looking for is escaping me right now, too. But
well, where is it? Where is the transloading facility in Minot?
I would have that in my file, but I'd have to actually get the specifics out of the folder. I can get that to you after the meeting if you'd like.
All right.
The intermodal, that's what you're looking for.
Intermodal facility.
Your question about how many jobs this might entail, I think that would have to be, that question would have to go to the company.
Fine. The Otter Tail Power Company, BF5, the Otter Tail Power Company informal hearing, did I understand that correctly? It's October 10th, October 10th, 2012 at 1:30 p.m.?
That's correct.
Okay,
here in the commission room.
Yes, and what is the hearing, what is the deadline for folks to request a hearing?
October 26th.
Okay.
Yes, October 26th.
Okay.
We certainly wouldn't make any decisions till after that time had passed.
Okay, and the towns again are Abercrombie, Amenia, Christine, Walcott, Davenport, and Mapleton.
That's right.
Do you have anyone out? I
think there are Kindred, Castleton. I think there are already agreements between those two.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because there was mention that Jamestown. This is the first one in southeastern North Dakota.
I think in a while, because most of the ones we've seen have all been in the north and northwest. So this is the first one that I've seen in the southeast for quite some time.
Well, I was thinking about Kindred and Castleton. I guess I think they
I'm sure they've had service area agreements for a while.
Well, it hasn't been that long, because I remember.
Been here a while, though.
Anyway.
Just because it was when you were here doesn't mean, no.
The 8-inch, KC1, the 8-inch crude oil pipeline, can you refresh from, it's 4 miles long?
It's 4 miles long. It's a $2.5 million expected or estimated investment.
And this goes from, what is the beginning and the end point again, please?
The beginning point is Tesoro High Plains North Knife River Valve Station, and then it runs up to the transloading facility, which is the former Indian Head Mine headquarters.
And where is the Tesoro Knife River Station that you mentioned?
Well, it's... Do you want a specific location? It's milepost 55.78 of the Tesoro High Plains line. It's in section 1, T-143 North, R-89 West.
I was just thinking, like, where is it in relation to Zap?
Oh, it's south.
South of Zap?
It's south of Zap. South and a little bit east. So the line runs from the southeast, mainly north, into the
How far south of Zap and east?
It's mainly south.
How far?
Four miles.
4 miles?
Yeah. It's probably 3.5 miles total in terms of...
Because if I recall correctly, the Glen Herald Mine headquarters isn't it in the city of Zap, or is it just outside of it?
The Indian Head... well, it's right there. I mean, it's pretty close. Yeah.
All right. And the KC2, the Hess Corporation, I was a little confused. Does this pipeline, the 14-inch pipeline that's referred to, does it exist right now?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
There was a line this about 10 miles long that's put in placement in 1960. It's part of their gathering system for Hess. So, you know, obviously it's a legacy line. It's been there a long time. Recently, of course, Hess has built this rail facility at Tioga and this truck loading facility at Romberg. And this line straddles those two. And what they've done is they've put a link into this 10-mile line to allow oil to flow from the Romberg truck facility to the Hess rail facility and increasing the pressure. So it's going to add 24,000 barrels per day of capacity onto the line that already has 54,000 barrels per day capacity. So it's going to be a significant line, 78,000 barrels per day. But by virtue of both its destination and the amount of oil that will be placed into it, it will now be determined or be called a transmission facility requiring our jurisdiction.
Okay. But the line exists and you essentially...
It's already there. Yeah.
Blessing this change of...
Well, actually, it's interesting, Dale, because you're right, because as a gathering line, it didn't need to be sited. As a transmission line, it does need to be sited. And because it wasn't originally a transmission line, it doesn't fall under, as I understand it, doesn't fall under the footprint law that would allow them to, you know, just simply certify that they're not interfering with any exclusion or avoidance areas, but rather requires siting. Now, there is a little above-ground investment. It's about $1 million, Dave, of investment that will be required to tie all of this in and give it the adequate pumping capacity. But all of that's right within the Romberg truck station pumping station or loading facility. So there's no new land that will be impacted.
So if I understand this correctly, the existing line heretofore was used to feed in oil to this truck loading facility?
Well, I don't even know that it was used for that. I mean, I think it's part of their gathering system from the 1960s and 70s.
That would be transmission.
Right. But now that it's going to take oil off of a truck loading facility and transfer it to a rail loading facility, which will then have access, of course, to all of the markets with which we're familiar, it's now becomes a transmission facility.
Okay, so essentially it was a gathering line for oil production.
That's exactly right.
Instead, it's going to be used to transmit or to ship oil from this truck loading facility to the rail loading facility.
Yep. And then on to markets.
Okay. And one of the advantages of this, if I understand you correctly, is that they won't be trucking the oil from this place to the rail loading facility. They'll be sending it through a pipeline.
It really takes, you know, when you consider 78,000 barrels of oil per day, divide that by the 200 barrels that goes on each truck, and multiply that by the 10.1 miles, you know, you've got a significant truck traffic issue that's going to be resolved by this.
I would think time, too. The time savings has got to be off the chart. They're moving the commodity.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right. Budget prepay, BK4.
Yeah.
You mentioned that the comments were due by October 26th. Did I hear you correctly?
Double-check here. That is request. Perfect. The comments and requests for hearing must be received by October 26th.
And you mentioned that one other company had asked for this sort of treatment. What is that company?
I don't remember what company it was off the top of my head. Pat, do you remember?
It's True Communications.
True Communications. And what is it that's unique about? What is it that's unique about this request and the request of True Communications?
To me, what's unique is these companies do not have facilities in North Dakota.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So recent changes allow them to ask for the ETC status without having facilities in the state. So when we received the first one, it kind of caught our attention, and this second one. So I don't know if this is the beginning of a wave of requests we're going to get from these type of telecommunication companies around.
The first one, was it granted, the first request?
I believe it was. We haven't got to it yet, or?
No, the comment period is not.
Oh, okay.
Yet.
When's the comment period end?
I'm thinking it's October 18th, but I'd have to double check.
But essentially, the interestingness of this is that these companies have no facilities, and
that's what piqued my interest.
If they, just for sake of argument, if they were to be granted this, what is the benefit to them and what is the benefit to the customer?
Well, they would have access to North Dakota customers. The customers would have the ability to choose who they receive their services from. It's opening up markets to North Dakotans.
I mean,
what about the access to universal service funds? That's the real prize with ETC status, is that they've become eligible for universal service funding.
And what is...
going over reshaping right now completely. So it's interesting to watch telecommunication right now, because USF funds are going to change. And so you're right, though, Kevin. That's a big cherry to get to it.
How does access to the Universal Service Fund going to – do you have any feel for how it is going to affect the price that is charged the customer?
Well, you would think that the price would probably go up. As we have the discussions, if the companies don't have access to USF funds and their costs don't go down, the cost to consumers might be going up.
Well, I'm saying if they have access to USF funds, would you expect that the price would go down?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I see your question.
The point of universal service funds, of course, is to help.
The price to the individual goes down.
Subsidize the underserved areas. it's a somewhat interesting to me. Pat's going to clarify this after we screwed up, but it's interesting. It's interesting to me though that companies that don't have facilities based in the state would get universal service funds, which begs the question: what will they invest in? Those universal service funds, in fact, they become eligible.
Well, there's a whole other line of discussion that we're involved in with as they reshape USF funds, the Connect America funds, how that might impact North Dakota. We'll just see how that all unfolds as well.
I mean, would you expect that if they received access to the universal service fund that, since they don't have North Dakota facilities to invest in, that the participation of the fund would basically drop to the benefit of the consumer?
Just have to wait and see. It's going to affect, the USF funds are already, I won't say overused, but there's already more requirements to request, let's say, than there is money. And is that restructured? It will affect North Dakota customers.
The whole makeup of the Universal Service Fund, as Brian said, is under review and reconsideration and dispute and debate. So I suspect we'll have sometime in the not too distant future a very different looking Universal Service Fund.
The Connect America Fund is what the new buzzword is going to be, with different levels of funding and different
even uses of it.
Absolutely.
The Shores Company if I recall correctly, the proposed fine is $2,000.
Staff is recommending a proposed fine of $2,000.
And they has Shores asked for a hearing?
I don't believe so. We're quite honestly having challenges in communicating with them. That's why we move forward with scheduling the hearing. Typically, the staff works through them. We've had consent decrees in the previous ones where the company sat down with staff and they basically admitted, yep, we did this and worked it out and they recommended a fine and we move forward. This particular case, staff has been having a challenge working with the company and they recommended the hearing and the fine and we'll see what happens that day.
But just so that I'm clear, they did not ask for this hearing. You just scheduled it on your own volition.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Now, for the next magical trick here, CapEx, what is the problem with the river crossing?
Well,
I don't see any problems with the river crossing.
Please, yeah.
My concern isn't the specific location of the river crossing. My concern is that we were given limited options of where it would cross the river because Minnesota's already building the line. They've previously sited the line, and there were limited possibilities for where it would cross North Dakota. So I'm not passing judgment specifically on this one river crossing per se. My bigger concern with the river crossing isn't even right at the river itself, but its proximity then as it goes from east to west. And, through Pleasant Township, near the cities of Oxbow and Hickson and the Bakke Addition, and the number of landowners, homeowners, and their potential for growth should be given at least equal weight. The human element, as I said, should be given equal weight to those established communities as we're giving to the possibility of a growing community.
What I'm a little unclear about is, okay, if you don't object to this particular river crossing, and what you do object to is apparently the fact that, at least to some extent, that this route in North Dakota is being forced upon us by Minnesota, mm-hmm. if I'm interpreting
right.
what you're saying correctly. I mean, how, given the stage of the project now, how practical is that to be, we're upset that our sovereignty is being infringed upon, but at the same time, essentially you have a project that's being completed in Minnesota and your options in North Dakota by definition are limited. So isn't this, Frank, forgive me, isn't this kind of a pointless objection on your part?
Well, I think that if we don't make an objection at this point, we just enable the state of Minnesota to continue doing what they've always done, and that is abrogating the sovereignty of the state of North Dakota. So, Dale, call it symbolic if you'd like, but I don't think it's insignificant.
See, Dale, if I could just throw in there, Commissioner Kramer and I have had this discussion over numerous work sessions since the beginning of June, and
yeah.
I guess I look at it as that this is a CapEx project that was started. We knew it was going to start in the Mapleton area, and we knew it would conclude in St. Cloud. There was three river crossings that were looked at. This, quite honestly, is the river crossing that I think even my colleague would agree has the least impact on that particular point of that river crossing. But with the diversion really did kind of change a lot because the initial two corridors that we saw were one farther to the north and then one going to the interstate on I-29 And going straight south to Wahpeton area and then cutting over. And so with the changes in the diversion, Minnesota, in my opinion, just kept doing what they're doing planning. Because of the uncertainty created by the diversion and ourselves in this commission, back when we said, you know what, we're going to do a combined corridor and route hearing, that was significant because had we pushed forward with the corridor hearing, we would have probably determined our point before Minnesota. So when the commission decided to let those two be combined, we set the stage for Minnesota to finish firsthand. And if I didn't think that this was the right place for the project, I certainly wouldn't be voting for it. But this 33 miles, with the exception of moving the line further to the north, this is the shortest route that you could have in North Dakota. And when you look at the way this sets up, it basically runs straight east to I-94, I guess, and then runs right down. So the concerns about people's homes and all those, I mean, those are all concerns that we deal with. But no matter where this power line goes, it's going to be impacting someone. We've purposely gone to the west of Mapleton, gone south of Horace. Yes, it does kind of go north of Osgood in that area, but there's a path through there where, with the exception of, actually, there's no homes in this area that are within the 500-foot corridor. So I think this is an appropriate route, and we really need to get this project completed. Otherwise, we face reliability concerns in 2015.
Is it your opinion that this route affects the least number of people that could practically be affected?
It's hard to draw that conclusion because there could be numerous routes. But as we found out with the Mid-Kona line that covered 200 and some miles, you find what you think is an appropriate route. It would be hard for me to imagine impacting less North Dakotans on this route just because it's the shortest miles that you can actually conceive without going right through a town, which is not going to happen.
See, Dale, I would argue that minimal adverse impact on the welfare of citizens isn't a measurement of how many people or how many miles it exists in our state, but rather how many people are adversely affected. Nor do I believe that the standard should simply be, is it outside of, quote, the avoidance area? So if you have a community like, say, Oxbow or Hickson or the Bakke Addition where there's an aggregation of people and it runs within a quarter of a mile or a half a mile and they object to it, but there's another landowner, a single landowner, where it runs within 500 feet, what's the greater impact? Is it the numbers or is it, the miles? I mean, this line already, as it was stated in the order itself, goes through an avoidance area. It goes within 500 feet of an existing residence. That residence signed a waiver. As was also pointed out, it hangs, although just a couple of feet, over parts of the community of Mapleton. But the elected officials of Mapleton passed an order issuing the city of Mapleton approved it with a conditional use permit. So there are avenues to do that, and they've been done, but my concern is this, that we've moved the line south from the optimum position to meet both the reliability and the shortest route to honor the fact that the city of Fargo is growing to the south. And the city of Fargo asked us to move it further south to accommodate their growth. In doing so, we've infringed upon other communities that are already established. I'm just saying I think we have to give some weight to the established communities as well and work a little harder to find perhaps a route that is less imposing on fewer people. Maybe there isn't one, but we don't know because I think, frankly, the state of Minnesota did limit our options for not. It's maybe crossing the river isn't the right way to put it, but rather crossing the border, whether there was a river there or not.
Do you have an idea of where your ideal route could be if you could just draw one?
I do not, because of course I can only deal with the evidence that's in the record. But Dale, one of the options that was never considered, if it's an option at all, is could we go north of Fargo?
Yeah.
For example. Where there's a lot more industrial development.
Dale, that's where I go back to the commission. We agreed to combine the corridor and the route hearing. That's the purpose of having a separate corridor hearing, that we approve a corridor. So when we go back, that was a significant decision. And I just want to reinforce that the Pleasant Township Board of Supervisors approved the conditional use permit on this. So that's the folks that are closest to this project approved it, if you will. And, you look at going farther to the north. I mean, you look at a map of Fargo, I mean, there's people everywhere, and so to say that you could go farther to south and have less impact, you could, or maybe you couldn't. The point I think that we need to make is to focus on This is a project that's gone through the process. There has been changes made to accommodate different landowners or the pilots. It meets the criteria. We need the power, and we really have to make the decisions here.
But essentially, what Kevin, what you're unhappy about is that you think it goes too far south and infringes upon.
I don't, Dale. I actually think it's quite practical to consider whether it's unlikely or somewhat likely or very likely that the diversion will be built. I think it's prudent to consider that and to consider that.
Does this not consider that?
It does consider that. But my point is we haven't even. What about routes further south, as an example? While it's longer in North Dakota, that doesn't mean, and it certainly would impact more landowners, but that doesn't necessarily mean it impacts more people. And so we're giving deference to the human element by moving it further from Fargo. But we're also denying the human element by moving it closer to other established communities. And I'm just saying, if aggregation of people is a major factor, then we ought to be looking for more rural areas to run it through rather than established communities.
I mean, is that an option that you would favor, moving it even further south?
I would certainly like to consider it, yes.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I'm not passing judgment on this based on all kinds of other options. I want to see all kinds of other options.
And if I am reading this map correctly, it goes like this?
Yes.
It does. Okay. Yeah.
It goes straight south, and then roughly, you go west of Mapleton, south into Addison Township, go east, not quite to Horace, go south, loop around the bottom of Horace, and then kind of wind it through just north of Osgood.
The conditional use permits that you referred to that the communities approved, are those valid?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know how long they're valid, but I know that they're obviously our orders say that unless the company has appropriate permits, they can't build it.
So what I'm saying is, isn't the approval of a route of a power line your bailiwick, not that of Board of Supervisors in some township?
We ask for all the permits to be in place before the line is constructed. So the fact that I will have to double check with the attorneys on that. I know that if we don't have a permit from one of the federal agencies, or if the SHPO doesn't concur, we're probably not going to override them. But I don't know, Alana, if the township doesn't, or Mitch, I guess in this case, if a township doesn't approve it, can the commission still proceed?
Yes, we can.
Well, I was thinking about the Berthold matter. I mean,
they worked that out before we got to that. But the point for me, I guess, what's significant is you've got the folks, the local Pleasant Township Board, they thought this was appropriate. So to me, if they'd have said no, well, then that might have changed some of the viewpoints, but they didn't.
Do you expect anyone to appeal this?
I don't believe there's a party available to appeal it, quite honestly. There were no interveners.
Is the line going above the river or beneath it?
Above the river.
And the poles are going to look similar to what you see along the interstate?
Absolutely.
Driving to Minneapolis? Okay.
And they're double-circuited, so some point in time, if we continue to need more power in that area, they can add another line to this setup and not have to go through the siting process again. They'll have to inform us, of course. But so this really sets the stage to meet the reliability in 2015 and beyond, and also relieve the export constraints that we currently have in North Dakota for our good lignite coal and any wind that natural gas that might put in the grid. Dave, did you have anything? Okay. Well, with that, let's close the meeting, and we'll open our administrative meeting in 10 minutes at 11:15.